2 Samuel chapter 8, I think you see here the sort of more negative sides of David. He was a wonderful man. He was a man after God's own heart. And yet he does have these weaker elements. And he was not allowed to build the temple because he'd shed so much blood. And I think the idea was not so much that he had just physically killed a lot of people, but that he had actually just simply devalued the human person by his general attitude to human life. You remember when he's supposed to bring back 100 Philistine foreskins to Saul in order to marry his daughter, he just brings back 200. Well, he'd scribble another 100 guys. Well, they were all somebody's sons. They were all somebody's brother, somebody's father, somebody's, you know, child. And yeah, he really is guilty of this, I think. And verse 1 says that he took the mother city out of the hand of the Philistines. 1 Chronicles 18, verse 1, the parallel says David took Gath. So I think that Gath is the town in view. Well, you remember Goliath was from Gath. He killed Goliath. And then years later, when he's desperate and in a low point of faith, he goes to live in Gath. And he brings them the sword of Goliath as if to say, look, guys, I'm totally on your side. And Achish was really kind to him. He let him go at that time. Remember, David pretends he's mad, and so they let him go. They don't kill him. Although they say, look, this is the guy of whom they sung, David has slain us 10,000 of us. And then later he does return, and he does again live with the Philistines and is supported by them and says, yeah, yeah, I've betrayed my people. I'm on your side. And he goes out with his men and says, oh yeah, we're going to go and kill people from our Israelite brethren. We're going to go kill them. But actually he doesn't. He goes and attacks Amalekite villages and settlements, and so that nobody actually ever opens their mouth and says what had happened, that he actually wasn't attacking Israelites, he was attacking Amalekites. He kills everybody, including children, so that there's not a soul left. And yet, in all those cases, he was treated more graciously than he treated those Gentiles. In the case of the Amalekites, well, they did hit back on him at the end of 1 Samuel. You read that in chapter 30. They did attack his settlement and burnt the place to the ground, and they did not kill his wives and children, nor the wives of his men, but they took them captive, and he charges after them and gets them back. They were more generous to David than he was to them. The same with the Philistines. I mean, he had killed so many of them. He had totally despised them and just treated them as just nothing, with no respect for them. Then they're kind to him on two occasions, let him live with them, etc. And yet afterwards, when he's established in power, he is pretty mean to them, when they had been actually very gracious to him. Well, now, verse 2, he strikes Moab, 2 Samuel 8, measured them with the line, makes them to lie down on the ground, measure two lines to put to death and one line to keep alive. Well, this is like something out of the Holocaust. This is absolutely inhumane. Makes them all lie down in three lines and says, yep, this line, for no particular reason, shall stay alive. Other two lines, dead. Let's kill him. Well, this is all the worst because in 1 Samuel 22, you read that his parents had taken refuge in Moab. It's alluded to later, let my outcasts dwell with you, Moab. So they had been gracious to him, and he's absolutely beastly to them. Well, he does something similar in 2 Samuel 12 when Rabbah is captured. He brought forth, this is chapter 12, verse 31, he brought forth the people that were therein, put them under saws, harrows of iron, axes of iron, made them pass through the brick kiln, and thus he did to all the cities of the children of Ammon. Now, this is just torture. To kill people in battle is one thing, but this sort of Auschwitz-style burning and torture of people, I mean, was this really necessary? Then 1 Kings 11, he killed every male in Edom. Was that really necessary? What about all the mums, grandmothers, wives, sisters, fatherless daughters? left to grow up in the dysfunction of a leaderless Middle Eastern home because a guy called David had killed all the males. I mean, is this really obeying divine commandment, or did this guy just have a straight-out bloodlust? Well, I mean, he had a bloodlust, fairly obviously. I think it's pretty hard to read this stuff and think anything other. There is no divine commandment to do this. He just does it. And yet, you compare that with the extraordinary grace that he shows to men like Saul. Well, Saul really persecuted him, messed his life up, was awful to him, and yet he's very gracious to him. And one of the Psalms says that he mourned over Saul as a man mourns for his own mother. You know, that sense of, I didn't appreciate her as I should have done, etc. When Saul is killed, it's a wonderful record in the early chapters of 2 Samuel how he goes out of his way to be as gracious as possible. He mourns over Saul. He's continually soft-hearted towards the family of Saul. Instead of trying to establish his own sort of dynasty and kill them, he pours out grace. People of Jabesh Gilead, for example, who had been supportive of Saul and buried Saul, all, and they were, you know, supporting the side that was against David. Oh, yeah, but he's very gracious to them. Well, how do we square this? Well, I suppose a psychologist would have a field day with this and would possibly come up with some theory that, you know, of course it's hard to be gracious to those who've been horrible to you. So you've got anger in you because of what was done to you by, for example, Saul and the house of Saul. As David continually laments in the Psalms how awful they were to him and how deeply they had hurt him and the anger that he felt with them. And yet he doesn't show that anger on them. But the psychologist would probably say, or Sigmund Freud or whoever, if he were alive today, would say, yeah, sure. So what did he do with his anger? He simply redirected it. It's a classic case of transference. He should have been angry with Saul and the house of Saul, but instead he's extremely gracious to them because he realizes that God has been gracious to him. But what does he do with his anger? Well, he simply transfers it onto various Gentiles, and he's going mad with hatred and just shedding blood, torturing people like crazy. And God was not well pleased. So when it came to building the temple, God said, no, I don't want a man like you, David, doing this work. You have got so much blood on your hands. So I think it's a challenge for us. Don't transfer your anger. Don't just say, okay, I'm not going to be angry with you, but I'm going to be angry with the neighbor or whatever. We've got to deal with these things, and anger and wrath in that sense are a purely natural reaction. And yet, we have been saved from wrath, from God's wrath, because we are serious sinners. We have been saved from that by his grace. And this ought to touch us very, very deeply. We cease from anger. We cease from wrath because of our experience of his grace. You do not just rechannel it or transfer it onto somebody else. That's what David did. I'm not a psychologist, but I do believe that, it's looking at the record, I'm a Bible reader and a Bible student, that would be who I am, and just simply reading and rereading the record and putting two and two together, this is clearly what happened. Theories of transference or whatever to one side. Yeah, you just figure it from reading the records. Amazing grace on one hand to certain people who actually he had a right to be angry with, the house of Saul, and then he transfers that onto other people, Gentiles. Ah, yeah, they're just Gentiles. I can take it out on them. And you wonder also, more than wonder, about verse 4. David hamstrung all the chariot horses, but reserved of them for 100 chariots. Well, David had captured 1,000 chariots and horses, we're told, and yet that's in verse 4, and yet he keeps 100. So he hamstrung 900 horses. Well, all right, I sort of understand how he does it. He's sort of saying, in the law, it's not allowed to have horses, so better hamstring them, 900 of them, but I'll keep 100. he sort of figured that 90% obedience kind of wasn't bad. Well, again, there is something funny there. This idea of, well, yeah, I was 90% obedient, and I will, in willful and cold blood, cut myself some slack and say that, yep, I shall be disobedient for 100 of them. Well, he was still breaking the direct commandment to not have horses, to not have horses and chariots. He cut himself slack on that point. And what happened to his son Solomon? Well, he went crazy on this. He was 100% disobedient in this matter of chariot horses. He became obsessed with them. He built whole cities to look after all his chariots and horses. The same also with women. I mean, David had a weakness for women quite clearly, and it's recorded that he had 6 sons in 7 years by 6 different women, including Gentiles. You can figure that partly from this chapter to Samuel 8, and if you compare 1 Chronicles 3. And also in 1 Chronicles 3, he had other children by, quote, the concubines. Well, okay, so he cut himself some slack with women. And what effect did that have on Solomon? Well, he got crazy. The guy ends up with like 1,000 wives plus concubines. He absolutely repeated the failures of his father. So this is the thing. If you are sensitive to God's way, you won't say, ah, yeah, that's good enough. Well, I was pretty good. I hamstrung 900 horses. And whether he actually had to be that cruel to the animals, I don't know. I would have thought he could have done something else with them, quite honestly. A big show of obedience, but I'll keep 100. You see, that's still disobedience. This kind of brinkmanship, this kind of argument with God is not appropriate. Absolutely not. And we can all catch ourselves doing this in the deepest recesses of the human heart. We want to give him our all, and he quite rightly asks for our all with our whole heart. And that is what we should give him.